Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day with the people that love HR. So let's get to our guest because it is going to be a great show, end of a wonderfully challenging and not simplistic week. So, but very good. And what a way to end it. Jason Lawrenson, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
What is up, Brian? Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. So let's kick this thing off. Introduce yourself to our lovely Drive Through HR family, and then after that, we'll get right into it and see what's top of mind, my friend.
So, for those that don't know me, I am best known as a talent anarchist. I'm half of the talent anarchy team, myself and my partner, Joe Gerstant. I think he might have been on recently, not too long ago. Talent anarchy is, we do a variety of things. We do some keynote speaking. We published a book a couple of years ago called Social Gravity. And we have an HR consultancy where we try to help companies make work more human so that work works better for the human beings, and then the human beings produce better quality work that drives the business. So that's me in a nutshell.
Got it. Based out of lovely, at least for another month or so, Omaha, Nebraska.
Indeed.
Before it gets
it's pretty cloudy today.
Yeah, it gets ass cold up there, folks. You got to plug stuff in to just make it work. That's cold. So, they're tough up there, so that's part of the deal. So,
of course.
Pre-show. You know, we talked a little bit about our pre-show about kind of what's top of mind, and you definitely shot me down on a mile of my ideas, which is fine. I can take it. And said it was kind of boring and I should get a life and those are horrible ideas, and that's all right. That's good feedback. So let's go with your ideas. So what does it take? You're a professional speaker and you do a great job of it. I think I've seen you actually more than any other speaker that I've ever seen. And it's 7, 8, 9, 10 times. And I actually enjoy watching you, and I learn something every time I see the same thing, which is pretty amazing. So I don't pay attention, or you know, you're hitting in some really good points that I just need a little deeper work there, one of the two. But so what does it take to be a compelling speaker? Well, okay, let me step back. What does it take to be a good speaker? Because I know a lot of people want to do that and want to get better at it. And then what does it take to be a compelling speaker?
All right, so yeah, let's be honest, your ideas did kind of suck, so I appreciate you taking the signal for me. This is a way more interesting conversation, so that was a good choice. Good choice.
They did.
So this is a good question, and I actually get asked this a lot, and the one thing I would say is that I know what I know, and I know what has worked for me, and as a speaker, I've gotten to be, you know, you kind of become a snob or whatever, so you look at other speakers in different ways and you look for different things. So, but I am certainly a long ways from being fully cooked as good as I want to get too. So I'm learning all the time, but here's what I think, based on my experience, is that I think a good speaker, honestly, I think the biggest fail point for most speakers is a lack of preparation. I think that's in general, that's a very broad statement, but I think there's a lot of them, there's a lack of preparation in terms of thinking through how you tell your story, how you create content, how you design your slides. And then I think the next step is preparation in terms of actually preparing and rehearsing and practicing and practicing and practicing. I think there's just so many people that under-prepare, they under-rehearse, they under-practice. They don't really put the time and effort and energy into their slides, the design of their content, how it's presented. And so I think that's honestly the difference between, I think, a poor speaker and someone that usually comes off fairly well is largely in preparation. That's been my experience anyways. I think when you are prepared, even if you're not the greatest speaker in the world, you can put forth a pretty polished product, or at least you can do an adequate job of speaking, even if you're not a naturally, you know, compelling speaker. I think the other thing is really taking it seriously for some reason, I think sometimes people dismiss speaking as like, well, I can talk, right? I talk all day with people, and and speaking to a group is just talking in front of a group. So it should be natural. I just need to get up and talk. And I think they don't sort of appreciate that. I think people that do well, that are good speakers, treat it as a skill, we treat it sort of as an art form, like it's a performance art. And so that to me is the difference between bad and good speakers. I think what makes a speaker compelling is when you have a point of view. When you have a point of view or an opinion that is, that's not safe, that's unique, that's interesting, that's refreshing. I think so many speakers out there you see in conferences or different places that are saying safe stuff. They're regurgitating information, but they don't have an opinion. They don't have a point of view they're advocating for. And I think you have to have a point of view. You have to pick a fight and then defend your position. I think that's the difference between good and compelling or great speakers is, you're picking a fight when you're speaking in terms of the ideas you're putting forward. So that's where I'll start. Does that resonate for you, Brian, from your experience?
No, absolutely. And I think absolutely the lack of preparation is the absolute key to where you're comfortable, right? To where you're not having to think kind of when you're up there. You're literally just navigating. You're sharing, and you can see what's happening with the audience, and you're not having to think about your content. You're delivering the performance.
Right.
And so I agree with that 100%. And the other side of that is, I love and I agree, compelling is the fact that you can create a tension, good, bad, and different tension. You create a tension in the room with the performance based on what you have, right? I think that's where it becomes, the energy goes up a level, and where maybe it's a little bit uncomfortable, or it makes you think, or it evokes some emotion outside of just like, okay, great, kind of like I'm drifting and I'm in and out and this is good and that's good to hear it again. I've heard it 20 times, but it's nice to hear. You're checking the boxes as a listener or the audience. So I like both points on that. So Anisha, I think you had a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I like the idea, as you said, as the preparation part. And I want to stress more on that POV, that unique POV that they are advocating for. But Jason and Brian, I would like to hear your thoughts on this. Because when I talk to people, and I'm sure you might have faced this as well, when you talk to people face-to-face, they are so good in terms of expressing their views or articulating their ideas. But when they are in front of a crowd, when they are speaking in front of a crowd, I'm not sure they're just focusing on the slides or the presentation, but they're missing the mark on telling the story and connecting that story and idea together so that the audience can relate to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you please tell a little more about the ability of this storytelling and incorporating that to the presentation? How do you do that?
I think that's a great point, Nisha. I missed that I am remiss now as I think about it, is that I think that's absolutely the other thing that, I don't know that you have to have it, but I think all of the greatest speakers that I've seen that I really admire over the years are storytellers. They either tell stories about other people, they tell great stories, or they tell personal stories, which tends to be where I gravitate toward. But I think you're right. And at some point along the line, I don't remember where somebody shared this with me, but they told me that people will sometimes remember information, but stories stick with people. Like, for whatever reason, we relate to and we internalize and we connect to stories. And usually out of a keynote, for Brian, you've seen the Social Gravity keynote several times. We have this story in there about, Joe tells a story about the urologist that, that did his vasectomy. And we'll have people that have sat through our session. I remember at one point we had finished doing our session in, it was Central Ohio. And we sat there and we got done and a young woman comes up and she said, said I was sitting there listening to your speech thinking, I think I've heard this before. This is very familiar. And she said, it didn't really connect to me until you told the vasectomy story. And then it hit me that I had sat in your session at the Sherm Annual Conference last year. That on one hand, it like struck me how powerful the story is, right? How powerful a story is for people to connect. That's what she remembered. But on the other hand, it was incredibly depressing because it also, sort of hit me that we think we're unique in a lot of ways. There's two guys, our content, our story is different, all these things. And yet the only thing she remembered was the story about the vasectomy. And so story is incredibly powerful. And I do think you have to, literally I cultivate, when I'm building stuff, I think about stories. I try to unpack my own personal experience and think where have I seen or experienced something that supports this idea? And I'll I collect those stories until I find one that really seems to fit, and then I try to find one that's funny. But it's hard work. So I think story is good. The other thing I forgot to mention earlier is risk. I think that's the other thing that I think makes a difference between good and, the good and great is the willingness to take risks on the stage, to risk doing something, going too far, looking ridiculous, being over the top. It's in that space between when you are comfortable and when you feel completely out on a limb. That's where greatness, I think, happens, and you have to be willing to do that. We've incorporated dancing and other stuff at times into our sessions, and I mean, it's the first time we did that was scary as hell. I had no idea whether the audience would go with us, but they did, and that has become a really defining thing for us. People react to that. So, but that's a great, great observation about story.
Yeah, and I guess my contribution, because I think Jason definitely kind of summed it up, is you definitely did a lot in front of big audiences, and I think the storytelling, and I agree 100%, I think people that can fluidly personalize what they're talking about is absolutely critical for having people identify with the person that's on the podium or on the stage or in the audience, who's basically the center of attention for 60 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever it is. If they can identify and get the personal connection with that, I think that is where it starts to change how they feel, right? And you have opportunities when you're speaking either with one-on-one with somebody as you interact on a daily basis, in relationships, or if you're speaking to 10 or 10,000 people, you've got an opportunity to affect how people feel about themselves, about what you're talking about, about whatever the case may be. And so if you don't really seize the opportunity to do that, and some speakers don't, and the best speakers do, and make that connection, you really, truly just don't get it done at the end of the day. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about a lot of the people that CBOC that we work with and the people that we get to see as we're looking. I mean, I'm sitting there going, wow, that's a really good point. And I get the connection, and I can look around the audience, and I see the connection while people are really paying attention and they're laughing. And you know what I mean? It's an experience. If you can create an experience when you talk, I think that is probably the ultimate scenario, is you've created an experience. And for me, those are the ones that impact me the most. The content, yes, is important, and there's some things that are very more technical, absolutely, but a lot of times it's the experience with the people that are there, the person on stage. The whole experience is really important. That'll stick with me, just like the story did. You know, I mean, that is a little depressing that, you know, Joe's junk is the only thing that kind of came out of that experience the initial time, but I bet the second time there was more things. I'm just, you know, that's my guess.
Let's hope. Let's hope.
I was just saying, I'm actually learning from these professional speakers today, and I'm so happy that our audience can also learn with me together. And I've seen you both speaking at various conferences, various avenues. So to our audience, you know what? We have a great content. We did all the preparation to get that kick-ass public speaking session. And we have a story on. Yeah, we are right on the stage to do the presentation. But how do you go about, you know, overcoming your fear of public speaking or facing that crowd? Just give some insights to our audience.
That's a great question. And I don't know that I'm the greatest. I'm not the greatest one to answer that because I don't get really fear. I get excitement. Part of the reason I do speaking is because I feel most at home when I am up on a stage in front of a big group of people. Like, I love being up there. That's when I feel like I do my best work. So I don't get the stage fright. But I do think that, at least early on, for me, it goes back to where we started. It's all about preparation. When you are prepared, when you know what you're going to say, when you have it down and you know how it's going to go and you've got it grooved in and you're in charge, then I think a lot of the trepidation goes away because you're controlling what you can control, and then at that point you have to kind of let it go. And I don't know, Brian, I think you like to be on stage too, so you might not be the right person to answer this either, but it's hard for me to relate to that because I've never had that same kind of fear of stage.
I get absolutely nervous every time. It doesn't matter. Every single time, I definitely have, I think there's, I'm right at that 49%, 51%. 51% is definitely an anxiousness. And the other part is excitement because I know that once I get through the initial getting it started, the waiting period, I do like to be able to be up there. I do enjoy that. You're 100% right. Total attention whore. I like to be up there and have that communication and kind of get people, you know, get to the emotion part there. But I have to amp up to it. I mean, and that's just technique. I mean, that's just something, you know, Nisha, your question. That's just something over the years because I'm actually an introvert that works hard at extroversion, and so which is shocking to maybe a few people out there, but it's true, is I just focus in on watching my breathing, right, making sure that obviously being prepared is important, getting there early so I'm not rushed is important, taking a walk in, you know, and just making sure that I look to see where things are so I don't have, like, the surprises that takes my mind off what I'm doing. And that's all being part of prepared. And so I like to actually do that, and I actually like to meet some people that potentially might even be in the session just to say hi and just kind of talk a little bit just to kind of get a little bit of my, you know, kind of amped up a little bit. And so, and I focus in. I focus in on the great speakers. This is my whole methodology. I focus in on the people that I think are kick-ass speakers. And I'm like, you know, and try and tap into that energy that I've seen them deliver on stage. I do this every single time, whether it's I'm in front of a group of 10 or I'm, you know, in front of a group of 150. It doesn't matter. I kind of have the same process because if I if I skip steps, it doesn't feel like it starts out as well. It takes me longer to kind of get into my groove and kind of get into how I'm really just kind of interacting with, you know, with the crowd or the audience. So, yeah, I mean, I have a very specific kind of process that I go through to make sure that I'm just not, you know, a complete dork on stage, you know. So, because that's happened. That's happened where I've just been a little bit not focused and it takes longer to get there and it doesn't feel as comfortable. And so, and that's kind of a disservice to the people that have came and sat down and want to be part of an experience. So, you know, I'm not doing my part. So let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, Brian and Nisha talking with Jason Lawrenson, half of Talent Anarchy. So Nisha, hopefully that gave some insight into just some things for people to think about. Think about your breathing. I mean, just literally deep breaths and just focus in on actually thinking about the breath going in and out kind of just helps kind of, for me, is kind of a very much a centering reset versus thinking about, you know, potentially wetting myself. So it's kind of an alternative type methodology there.
Yeah, those are all great, great tips and insights. Because you know ahead of time who are all the audience, and you will have comfort level. You will create a comfort level by knowing that crowd in front of you. And talking about those tips, I just thought of this one more thing that is this. I'm sorry. Yeah, the body language that I wanted to ask you guys. Sometimes, you know, we have great speakers on, but still, I'm not sure how much people, value whether it's based on their body language. Sometimes it can be because of fear, or sometimes there, as Jason said, there won't be any fear at all. But that's just a nature of people, how they deliver or how they interact with others. So, Brian, you actually evaluate public speakers and bring those great speakers to your organization. And Jason, you are one of the topmost speaker in this HR community. So how much of importance do you both give to, you know, the body language while doing the presentation or doing this public speaking session? Jason, I will go with you first.
Okay. I think it's incredibly important. I think when you talk about, I mean, body language is everything for me in terms of, you know, how you stand, what gestures you use, how much you move. Because we've all seen speakers, and this is probably one of the things that I notice the most when I watch speakers are, you know, body language is probably the one thing that can distract most dramatically from the message, from the story. If you're standing telling a story and you're shifting back and forth like a rocking horse, or your hands are doing something weird, or you're not looking at your audience, all of those things send signals to the audience that are distracting and distract away from the message. And so this goes back again to preparation, like doing practice, practicing. And if you're really serious about it, practicing and videotaping yourself, setting up a video, doing it as if you are presenting it in front of the group, and then looking back at the video and watching this. If you're speaking a lot, videotaping yourself when you're actually up in front, you know, setting up a video camera and just taping yourself. Joe and I used to tape everything early on because we'd want to play it back and look at kind of how we did and how we looked and what was distracting and what's not. I still, this is one of the things I still work on, is trying to think about and control involuntary, you know, movements, being comfortable sort of stopping and standing and knowing where I'm at and being intentional about all of those, you know, being in control. But again, if you don't know your content, if you don't have it locked, if you aren't, like, if you haven't done your preparation and design and have that nailed and you've got it memorized and you're comfortable, then it's really hard to be conscious of your body movement. It's hard to be intentional about those things unless you really have it. So, again, I think that's just another layer of preparation. I also think it comes with practice. It comes with experience. So critically important, you have to work on it. You have to work on it probably as much as any other part of it. That's part of the presentation. That would be my two cents anyways.
Yeah, that's kind of like the finish work. If you're building a house, you kind of got the rough in, and then you got the finish work, right? That's starting to get into the details of the finish work, because that's one of those, like you said, if you totally have the presentation cooked, you're good at the content, you start to get into understanding yourself and looking in the mirror, and it could be the rocking, it could be the hands, it could be the kind of how you're leaning or stepping or not, not being opened up to the audience. Like you could have posture, you could have positions and posture that you're moving around on that's very closed off from the audience versus very opened up, right? It's kind of a vulnerability or I'm going to fight about this type scenario. And there's definitely some speakers that I think naturally have that and don't have a lot of those extracurricular type crazy things that you just, you've developed over time that have got to be broken and gotten rid of. But it's really interesting, especially when you get into the specifics about that. And there's some people that I absolutely am mesmerized because they have it down and it's so fluid where you just don't even, from an evaluation standpoint, I'm looking at it and I'm like, wow. They know and they practiced and it looks so fluid to probably everybody, but I'm like, I'm micro-evaluating, like that has absolutely been practiced, right? Like the pause and kind of how the clicker is being held even and how, you're changing hands with it because you don't want to distract from a point, right? I mean, Jason, you did this enough that if you're messing around with too much stuff, you're distracting from the contents. The experience can get disruptive because people are like, I wish you would quit moving around, that effing clicker. It's driving me crazy. Just put it down, right? I mean, there's just things that happen,
Little things. And like I said, all of that comes with, it's all about comfort that comes with repetitions and practice and polish. I mean, it's hard work. It's just like anything. Being really good at anything requires lots and lots of work and energy and effort and practice and then finding people that can give you feedback, that can give you support, and not being afraid of feedback. I know people that won't videotape themselves because they don't like watching themselves on video, and it's like, well, I don't think you're ever going to reach your potential if you're not willing to give yourself some feedback. So.
Yeah, most definitely. So, Jason, we got about 2 minutes left. Great show. Time flew. You've actually got a new workshop that's around strategic HR. Tell us about that and how people can connect with you. And my friend, we are out of time, and we're all going to roll in and have an amazing weekend.
All right. So, quickly, it's just basically it's a workshop for HR leaders that helps them understand how to build compelling business cases that get the funding and the support for the HR initiatives that we know are important, but we got to get people on board with. And so it's talk a little bit about politics and understanding what role politics plays, how to navigate that. We talk about some sales skills that are required. We talk about how to build a compelling business case. And at the end, we talk about how to use strategic planning as a tool for influence. So it's a day-long workshop. We're hoping to kind of bring it to a town near you if we can find the right situation. Got it certified for 6 strategic HRCI recertification credits, so excited about that and going to be doing a bunch of those, I think, over the next couple of months. Thanks for having me.
Did you say 6 strategic credits in that workshop?
I did. Isn't that awesome?
Folks, you heard it here first. That is amazing. Cool.
Well played.
Yeah. Sham wow. That's all I'm saying. Sham wow. Good times. Good talk. Folks,
thanks.
We're out of here. Nisha, always a pleasure. Jason, I will talk to you soon. And I guess we're rolling out with a little of...
California.